song. Let's sing it. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Come on. It's gonna be fucking awesome. You know the words. It's gonna be fucking awesome. That's it. Sing. It's gonna be fucking awesome.
Yo, good morning, everybody. It's Jesse Blaze Snyder, the coolest geek alive. And guess what I just saw last night with my daughter, Parker, my youngest, my seven-year-old? I saw Blue Beetle. And, you know, I liked it okay. It was an enjoyable superhero film. As I've said many times before, I'm always trying to find the way to get the most enjoyment out of whatever it is I might be watching. So I went into this fully prepared to hate it. And on some levels, I did. On a lot of levels, I hated it. My daughter, she asked me afterwards, you know, what do I give it? What did I rate it? They love to ask for like a rating immediately after the movie. What do you rate it, Dad? And they'll all be rating the movie. And she rated it a 7, and I gave it a 6.5. But her 7 was like, yeah, it was good. And my 6.5 was like, it was okay. But in general, there's a lot of things about it that, you know, eh. But the big problem with it is that Blue Beetle is not ready for prime time. Not to say that this movie couldn't have been successful under different circumstances or handled a little differently. I might talk about how I might have handled it a little bit differently. But it got me to thinking, watching it, about all of these properties and characters that are being utilized by Marvel and DC that are not ready for prime time. And you might say, well, who are you to say that they're not ready for prime time? Well, I'm a comic book reader, and this is where these things are being adapted from the comic books. A beautiful thing about comic books, in addition to the revisionist history that allows them to stop and start and restart and try again with characters that they introduce, and brings us to the amazingness that we have in a book like Batman, where all of these incredible creators have come together and made something that's truly greater than the sum of its individual parts, and has created a mythology where good Batman writers can jump in there and write a story and immediately start playing a song that is familiar to us as fans, and that we will love, that will build on the tapestry that is created here with these characters. Now, Blue Beetle is a really interesting character. He is a legacy character from the Charlton comics that DC bought many years ago, and they had a Steve Ditko-designed Blue Beetle. You know, there's Spider-Man here. Come, Steve, come design us a really nice Spider-Man-esque costume. And Blue Beetle does have kind of a cool costume design. And Blue Beetle is a beloved character, Ted Kord. But Blue Beetle is beloved for his interactions with the Justice League as a member of the Justice League. That is kind of more where he has become a fan favorite. Not necessarily in his own book, not necessarily in his own classic stories. Blue Beetle does have some classic stories that, you know, fans might point to, but largely, they have to deal with interacting with other characters, interacting in the Batman universe for a crossover with the Justice League or whatever it might be. The Justice League International is a humorous take on the Justice League, which is really beloved by fans, and Blue Beetle and Booster Gold were major members of that Justice League. So when you have a character like Blue Beetle whose success is coming from a very specific place, like this Justice League International thing, well, you have to set the stage to introduce Blue Beetle in that same way if you're hoping to capture the audience's imagination in the same way that it worked for the audience of the comic books. Barring that, you're essentially offering your film audience the same thing that you offered the comic book audience with the individual books. Now, in the case of Blue Beetle, he was updated and modernized. I don't know. Now I'm going to say it's probably like 20 years ago, maybe a little bit more. But I thought his name was Jamie. I'm going to get it wrong. The Hispanic pronunciation of Jamie is apparently Amy? Hey, I'm not even going to get it wrong. Jamie is not Jamie, and they were like going out of their way to essentially make fun of anybody who might have thought his name was Jamie. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's spelt Jamie. Okay. And I've been reading it as Jamie Reyes for my whole life since the character has been introduced. It was really kind of annoying when they were mocking the people who called him Jamie. Okay. So I've been reading the adventures. And I mean, granted, I've been largely skimming through the adventures of this new Blue Beetle because it was clear that it wasn't for me. The way the book has been made, it is a product of its time. At the time, all of these adaptations were being made of different superhero characters onto the big screen. And there was a lot of big success with Spider-Man. One of the tropes that was, you know, you could blame the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, but there's plenty of other movies that do the exact same thing, is having your hero fight a villain who's tied directly to his origin and has almost identical powers as him at the end of the movie. This is happening in the Venom movies and both of them. happening here very clearly. And in basically every other superhero movie under the sun. So that was a trope that had already been established when this was being adapted as a comic book. One of the other tropes was taking whatever the superhero's costume might have been in the comics and adding extraneous details to it for no good reason. There are, oh my God, the Blue Beetle costume worn by Jamie Reyes is just so gaudy and heavy detailed and It's a cool design, honestly, but it's not my favorite type of thing to come out of comics. It is ready for prime time as far as movie designs because it was literally pre-designed with films in mind. And this whole franchise, this Blue Beetle reboot, it has been designed with films in mind from the get-go. It was designed to be something that would appeal to the Hollywood studios who were basically saying, hey, all of your characters are white males. You got anything else for us? So they started to invent a more diverse cast of characters in the comics at Marvel and DC around the time when this Blue Beetle reboot came out. But it legit is like they created it knowing it was going to be a movie one day. And I got to say, Blue Beetle, the new one, he has not been given enough time to become classic in any way, shape, or form. Ted Kord famously died while dealing with the supercomputer that Batman had. It was like kind of this, it was tied into this OMAC thing, which is also in the movie. The computer system, I forget what it was, but there's like a satellite that came to life and Batman was fighting it. And Ted Kord like discovered it at the beginning of the story arc and he got killed. And they had just really succeeded and bringing him into the Batman universe in an interesting way in the comics. And Ted, he was hot. You know, people were like, yeah, I really do like that Ted Kord character. Again, because he was really well-liked from the Justice League International. So they found a really good balance from the kind of comic-y, hokey, sweet Ted Kord, who was pretty silly to some degree in the Justice League International book. And they got him into the mainstream popularity through his appearances in Batman right before they killed him. So this is, we've had some success with the character and now we're going to do something dramatic with him. Awesome. Then they bring us this new Blue Beetle and he's been around for the past 15 years and he has done nothing of significance. I can't point to a classic Blue Beetle story. Now, this is why I say he's not ready for prime time. All you have to do to get some classic Blue Beetle stories under your belt as a company is hire credible writers to come in and do something with him until you succeed. You get Grant Morrison, you get Warren Ellis, you get Jonathan Hickman, whoever it might be, you launch and relaunch and relaunch that book over and over and over again until you have something that clicks with the fans. They have not been good about doing this. They've launched a lot of the books that are on this list for me today over and over and over again, but never with A-list talent that the industry approves of. A lot of the people who are cast in the roles of writer in particular for a lot of the books that I'm going to talk about, they've never done anything of significance in the comic book world. Nobody gives a shit about them or their writing. It doesn't matter that you like how they look or you like the PR angle that comes from saying, hey, this Hispanic writer is writing this Hispanic character, or hey, this female writer is writing this female book. It doesn't matter if the writers that you've put on the book are not talented enough to deliver something truly classic. You know, I was watching Blue Beetle, and I just, like, there has never been anything truly classic for him. And this is the expectation that everybody making superhero movies has. That, well, of course, there's nothing classic. These are just superhero comic books. This isn't the Lord of the Rings. Which the only reason why people say this isn't the Lord of the Rings is because Peter Jackson did a loving send-up to Tolkien and delivered Tolkien's work to the masses, and now the masses know how respectable Tolkien's work is. The masses still don't know how respectable the best comic books are, because I've got news for you. None of the comic books have ever been adapted in this way. Even something like Endgame and Infinity War, at the end of the day, dude, they pull the punch. It's a little bit of a joke on some level. It's not the stakes and the seriousness that really these superhero comic books, when done right, represent. There's an atmosphere of real stakes, the end of the world, that exists in comics that doesn't really exist in these popcorn flicks that we watch. And Blue Beetle is one of those movies that really, it's just fluff. It's just fluff. What are we really learning from it? What are we really getting out of it? It's okay. There's a lot of things to like about it on a very superficial level. But in order to do that, you have to lower your opinion of what these films can do. So I'm saying there's a lot to like, but it's only because I've lowered my opinion of what science fiction and fantasy done at 11 is really capable of. These stories are capable of more. And if you want to do more with these characters, you simply need to spend more time developing them to catch lightning in a bottle. And I can't say that they spent enough time with this Hemi Reyes. I literally did not understand that they were calling this character's name for the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then I'm like, oh, wait a second. Is his name not Jamie? Like, I understand, oh, his name's Namor, like, and having some sort of idea about things. Jamie is a very common English name that people have. So to go out of your way to be like, oh, well, not when you're Spanish. When you're Spanish, people who read normal English are idiots. Okay. Could we have named him something that would have denoted that for the readers at home so that we were not mispronouncing his name? And something tells me that maybe we were never mispronouncing his name and he's been Jamie for forever. And some Spanish-speaking person was like, hey, well, technically it would be pronounced Hemi if we were in Mexico. We're not in Mexico. We're in America. And, like, this movie really goes out of its way to kind of shame the audience for pronouncing the name Jamie incorrectly when lots of people have always been Jamie and they're still going to be Jamie tomorrow. So, like, just stupid things like that drive me so crazy. You know, this could have been done great, as could any number of these films and TV shows that are about to come out, if they spent the time with the monthly periodicals connecting great writers to the characters and giving them an opportunity to figure out the pulse of these characters, figure out stories that would make us care about them. So on this list of Blue Beetle and 10 other not ready for primetime superheroes coming to Marvel and DC films, we've got The Creature Commandos to kick us off. The first announcement of James Gunn's project. I didn't bother to like look them up any further. I'm aware of The Creature Commandos. I've read an issue here, there of books where they've tried to do something with The Creature Commandos. The Creature Commandos are fun, but Marvel has tried to do similar. They did a book called The Howling Commandos a while back. They had a book called The Howling Commandos with Nick Fury. That's a much older book. They tried to reinvent it as a horror military thing. This horror military thing, this has been an idea that's been circulating fantasy and science fiction for a long time. Nobody has exactly nailed it. Do I think that James Gunn could probably nail it? Yeah, probably, but there's no precedence of it being truly nailed by anybody that people like me who are fans of the comics, who are the people this company is supposed to be appealing to, you tell me Creature Commandos, I go, well, I've never really read a classic Creature Commandos story that I'm just demanding to see brought to life on the big screen. And I'm sure basically everybody else is like me. I'm sure more people have read more Creature Commandos than me, but I'm sure that they don't understand why the Creature Commandos of all properties is being brought forward to mass media. Other than the idea that, well, because it's not that well known, somebody like James Gunn can just do anything that he wants with it, which is my guess of what to expect with this Creature Commandos show, animated thing, whatever it is. It's going to be whatever James Gunn thinks that it should be. And this is my real worry about all these DC offerings to begin with. One of the other ones that's coming out in the new DC slate is Booster Gold. I don't remember if it was a TV show or a film. I think it was a TV show. Booster Gold. Booster Gold and the Ted Kord Blue Beetle, they're best friends. And this best friend camaraderie has become a classic thing in comics. This came out of the Justice League International. You want to introduce the world to Booster Gold in a way that the audience is going to enjoy? You need to introduce us to Booster Gold as a member of the Justice League who is different than the other members of the Justice League. You need to introduce us to Booster Gold alongside Blue Beetle so we can see their friendship form again in the same way, where Ted Kord's a pretty level-headed guy and Booster Gold is a bit out of his mind, but he keeps pulling Ted Kord into his crazy mania, and they're these great best friend superheroes that we love to kind of be a little disappointed in, because, you know, Ted Kord's not quite hitting it like Batman. Booster Gold's a little self-motivated and he's constantly learning that he needs to be more empathetic and more caring and more heroic and all these things. You know, the reason why we like Booster Gold, the reason why we like the Ted Kord Blue Beetle is because of that relationship that they had in the Justice League International. You want to recreate that experience for people at home who don't read comics? Well, recreate that experience. Don't just jump to doing a Booster Gold series by itself. Booster Gold was not setting the sales racks on fire by himself as a solo character. That is not how he became popular. That is not why we love him. So, let's just take this character that everybody loves, Booster Gold, and we're going to put him in a context in which he was not successful. Okay? That hasn't been successful for you. Not like that. One of the other ones that is going to be coming from the new DC Studios is an Amanda Waller show. Amanda Waller is a great character. She's one of my favorite supporting characters in the DC universe. I love it when she shows up as a supporting character in anything. In Batman, in the Suicide Squad, in the Justice League. Amanda Waller, great character. She has never had her own solo series. She has never starred in anything. There's never been a comic book called Waller. I don't know. Maybe there was a one shot that I missed somewhere along the way. There are no classic Amanda Waller stories that revolve around Amanda Waller. The reason why we care about Amanda Waller is because of her relationship with the Suicide Squad. It's because of her relationship with Batman or the Justice League, as an antagonist in particular to Batman or the Justice League. That character's wonderful like that. In that context, great. I don't know what they are thinking here. If they started to think, hey, we should do an Amanda Waller series, well, what they should have did, well, they should have hired Grant Morrison or somebody amazing, Greg Rucka, Ed Brubaker, and brought him in and said, hey, we need Amanda Waller ready for prime time. Can you write the great Amanda Waller story, the be-all, end-all of Amanda Waller, so that we can go adapt a version of the thing that you create if the audience likes it? And that's the thing. It's if you do these things, you set up a Blue Beetle, you have to get the character to connect with the audience. Jamie's been around for a while. We've had an opportunity to connect with that Blue Beetle. He has not been super successful. We like Jamie okay, but he's like a low-rent Mexican Spider-Man. He literally is Spider-Man. It's Blue Beetle. Oh, there's a spider thing. The whole reason Steve Ditko got brought in to redesign Blue Beetle's outfit, Spider-Man, Blue Beetle, hey, maybe we can have some success. It's going to be a fun kind of Batman version. It'll be like Batman mixed with Spider-Man. Woohoo! And now Jamie is just a young Peter Parker, Hispanic version of Spider-Man. That's basically what he is. And he's essentially a poor man Spider-Man because he's a ripoff. You know, like, it's no offense to Jamie that he's like Hispanic makes him a poor man or anything. That's not why he's a poor man. He's just a poor man because he came second. He came too late. There is Spider-Man. Spider-Man already exists. So Jamie doesn't exactly do anything that's particularly new or fresh or interesting. And so many of the other aspects of Jamie's story, even the family, you know, we got that family thing in Shazam. Or, you know, the way his costume, the weapons arms dealers, Ted Kord, he's got a weapons manufacturer. Yeah, just like Iron Man. And the weapon attaching to you and against you. I mean, we've seen these stories done so many places. It doesn't have anything classic or unique to offer in and of itself. And neither does Amanda Waller until James Gunn injects his own James Gunniness into the Amanda Waller series, and I'm sure it'll be very classic. Or will it? The problem is, I don't care. Fans don't care. People like me who read comics are like, why are you wasting my time with this? Creature Commandos is a much better choice than Amanda Waller. At least Creature Commandos has some books that you could adapt some stuff from. I can't say that they're books people are clamoring to see adapted, but they do exist. Amanda Waller literally has none. And neither does the Amazons. There are some versions of stories that might have Amazon in the title, or where one of the Amazons who is not Wonder Woman might star in the book. But again, these aren't exactly classic stories. Nobody has been clamoring to see them go deeper into the Amazon mythology. There is some good stuff done with the Amazon in Wonder Woman. In the context of Wonder Woman, we're very interested in the Amazons. But in the context of the Amazons by themselves without Wonder Woman, nobody gives a shit. Seriously, nobody gives a shit. There are no books based on this. Again, if you wanted people to give a shit, you should have got this idea a long time ago, started to put it into the pipeline in the comics, get the really wonderful, credible creators to come in and start doing some stuff with the characters until something clicks. You know, it might take a few years of actively getting great creative people to come in and do something great with the Amazons until you get something. And that's it. That's the way. That's how you adapt something that you want to put on the big screen. You get into the comics first. You make it work in the comics first. And then once it works in the comics, then you adapt it. Okay? Not too soon. So let's see. We're going to go over to Marvel now. We've got the Echo series. I love Echo. Echo's a great character. She was a very early story arc that I read as a young comic reader when she was first introduced by David Mack and I think Brian Michael Bendis in the pages of Daredevil. Talk about another character that they really ruined in their depiction. The person who they brought in to act as Echo is like hard. And I think they told her to be hard. She acts like she's like a quiet military lady. She's always got like a rough face on her, like expression on her face. And like, it's been years since I've read these books. But the thing that I remember liking about Echo was she was soft. And that doesn't mean she wasn't tough. She was very tough. I remember her like playing piano in the issues. And maybe I'm getting this wrong, but she was deaf. And she would listen to the vibration. And she would always be like posed in these very feminine positions. Now, that's not to say that she wouldn't do anything masculine. She would, you know, she would, you know, kick some people's asses here or there, but she would go back to like a softness. She was deaf and she was learning things in a really specific way. She was kind of similar in some ways to the Cassandra Cain character, who is more like this Echo character is. Quiet and badass and whatnot, but Echo was softer and sweeter, easier to love, easier to empathize with. When her storyline was over very quickly and you didn't see her again for a very long time in the comics, and you liked her, you wanted to see her again, but you wanted to see her again honestly because of some of the wonderful feminine energy that she carried. And this adaptation of Echo on the TV series was not the Echo from the comic books. I think they would have been way better if they had adapted that character. Now, again, in recent years, they have tried to do the thing of making Echo a bigger deal, giving her her own series. They've tried to do the thing that I've been saying you're supposed to do, except they haven't really succeeded with Echo. They haven't successfully brought her into the Marvel Universe in a big way. They had her on the New Avengers in this Ronin costume for a little while, so it wasn't really like she was on the New Avengers. You didn't really get to sit with her. There were ways to introduce her, but they should have been the way that she was introduced the first. There are things that we like about her, but like Booster Gold, we've skipped over those things. We liked her relationship to Daredevil. We liked his empathy for her because he is a blind man and she is deaf. And like that empathy that they shared as characters, that was interesting. Her softness mixed with her hardness that she was able to display because of her enhanced senses, that was interesting. This, hey, we're gonna give her her own series. And like, whoa, she didn't have her own series for, I don't know, a good like 15, 20 years after she had done the thing. She wasn't that popular. So if you want to make her that popular, well, you got to do it. And you didn't do it. You haven't succeeded at what you've been trying to do with Echo. That brings me on to some other characters. And Echo's more popular and more successful than these other ones I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about them all at once. Ironheart and Miss Marvel and America Chavez. These characters are all brand new. They are all diversity characters, characters that were added to the Marvel Universe to add diversity. There was a thing that they did called Marvel Now, where all of these characters were pushed to the forefront of Marvel Comics and given kind of premier A-list status overnight. And this Marvel Now story arc, storyline, rebranding of Marvel, it was rejected outright by the fans, by the readers. The readers straight up went, nah. And sales for vast majority of these books just went straight into the shitter. The characters of Ironheart, Miss Marvel, and America Chavez, they have been pushed very hard by Marvel. But again, Miss Marvel, she's not getting Grant Morrison stories. She's not getting the best that the industry has to offer. A lot of the times it seems that the people writing her are being cast because of their sex or their race to write her. That doesn't mean anything to the audience who reads comic books. We don't care. You know, if you're a film person and they announce that they're bringing in J. Michael Straczynski on some great sci-fi show, you're like, yes! If you're a comic person and they announce that they're bringing in blah, 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 for Miss Marvel, you go, who the hell is that? I don't care. Like, that's probably not going to be good. I've never heard of them before. They haven't proven to me that they're amazing with some other book. Like, that was the old way in which you would get work at Marvel and DC. You would make some incredible book outside of Marvel and DC, and then somebody would hire you. And then people would be like, oh man, this is the guy who made that incredible book outside of Marvel. Oh great, let's buy his incredible book inside of Marvel. So when you just bring some person in with a name and nobody recognizes the name, it doesn't do anything for you. So America Chavez, all the times that they've tried to make this work, and Miss Marvel, all the times they've tried to make her work, and Ironheart, it hasn't been working. Granted, Ironheart had the benefit of Brian Michael Bendis, but Brian and the audience, I love Brian. I've talked about Brian Michael Bendis before. He's great. The audience definitely left him loyalty wise somewhere along the way, and it was really during the propagation of this Marvel Now endeavor when he was trying to introduce a lot of diverse new characters for the company, and the audience was definitely resistant to all of the energy being put on all of these new and diverse characters. And I think the audience was a little sort of insulted because it was done so heavy-handed all at once. You know, Marvel Now, there was literally an initiative where they were pushing all of the old white guys out the door and replacing everybody with anything but a white guy. And it really just smacked of racism. Exactly what we were being accused of. There it is. There it happened again. See? There it is. There's more racism. That's what it is. That's what it looks like. It's a terrible thing that we couldn't get more women and more diverse racial representation in comics in years prior. There was a lot of businessmen at the tippy top of the pyramid who were stopping that from happening. Now those same businessmen have a directive from on high to gerrymander the whole of the racial divide and the sex divide in comics. They're messing with it until they get something that society will approve of. And they've been working on that for a long time. And it's definitely not organic. It hasn't been natural, and it hasn't been received well. Comic book fans, we expect a very natural progression of progress in the comics. And if progress takes place that we don't like or don't agree with, we're not going to read. We're not going to buy. And traditionally, well, the comic book company has to course correct. They have to fix the problems that the readers have with things. But in recent years, they have literally just started ignoring the fans. They just go, this isn't for you. This isn't for you. Who is it for? Who is any of this for? If it's not for me, who is it for? Like that is your big problem, Marvel and DC. Who are you making these things for? You think you're courting a new audience, but this audience that you're courting, they don't buy comic books. They don't go see movies unless the movie is so popular that they want to be like the popular kids. They don't buy merchandise. They don't buy toys. They don't buy stuffed animals. They don't buy action figures. They're just normal people. You want the merchandising juggernaut that is Star Wars from your franchises? Please, people like me, please your foundational people. We're the only ones who buy the things. We're the ones who tell the other ones that they should see it because it's so good. And you didn't have enough years of us reading Amy Reyes. I feel so stupid even saying it now. Of that Blue Beetle, we don't have enough years of reading brilliant Blue Beetle stories that we were like, oh man, you got to go see the Blue Beetle movie. There's so many great stories. I wonder what they're going to adapt. No, we knew that he was a hyper detailed Spider-Man knockoff who was generally fighting characters with very similar abilities to himself. And if that doesn't sound super interesting to you, well, yeah, it's not. It's not super interesting. It's not super compelling. These weren't the droids we were looking for. Neither is Ironheart. This show is going to crash and burn. Neither is Miss Marvel, as that show has already crashed and burned. This new Marvel's movie is going to crash and burn. Captain Marvel is the last one on my list. Captain Marvel is perhaps one of the originals. Around the same time where Blue Beetle was being introduced and you were getting your Ironheart and all this, they did a concerted effort to upgrade Miss Marvel, Carol Danvers, to Captain Marvel and try to push her as a really big deal in the Marvel universe and as a really big deal character, a titular character for Marvel. This was a good idea, I think. She had enough classic stories like losing her powers to Rogue and her being a part of the Captain Marvel legacy and the death of Captain Marvel. This is one of the reasons why we really hated Captain Marvel, because they should have adapted the death of Captain Marvel. They could have kept her as Miss Marvel to begin with, connected her with Captain Marvel to some degree, had Captain Marvel pass his powers on to her at the end of the movie, had a big ending with her honoring his death and all this stuff. And instead, they rewrote her origin so that no man was telling her what to do, which was just stupid. It was one of the first big retcons of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, getting rid of Captain Marvel. And I'm telling you, it's one of the first graphic novels of all time, if not the first, is the death of Captain Marvel from Marvel Comics. And what a missed opportunity it was to adapt that story. That is the classic context that we would like to see Captain Marvel in. And while you're adapting that story, perhaps get Grant Morrison instead of Brian Reed, I think was one of the guys who was writing Captain Marvel for a little while. No offense to Brian Reed. I've read plenty of comic books by Brian Reed. Brian's okay. Brian is an okay comic book writer. I like some of his work. It's okay. I'm a comic book reader, and I've read a bunch of his books, and they are passable. But they are not mind-blowing, hey, have you read the new issue of Captain Marvel? No. None of the Captain Marvel books that have been put out in the past, I don't know, amount of time, are like that. There's no books that we are losing our mind about, oh my God, we need them to adapt this story arc. And they've actually been trying pretty hard. But again, they've been trying pretty hard with the Brian Reeds of the industry and not the Grant Morrisons. I mean, like there's only a few people, honestly, who are like mind-blowing. A Joe Kelly. You know, there are some classic writers who could do these things, who could be brought in, who could give the audience the expectation that, hey, this could potentially be good. This guy's got good ideas. And they actually have a chance. They are actually good enough that they might write a story that is lightning in a bottle that you can then adapt into films. But there's only so many. Like, seriously, there's really only so many, and you guys aren't choosing them. The last one that I'll talk about here is Agatha Harkness. Agatha Harkness. She's a villain. She's never had her own book. Agatha Harkness is a supporting villain or a main villain in certain characters' storylines. Somebody who would show up in Doctor Strange. Somebody who would show up in The Defenders because Doctor Strange is on that team. No one who we've ever read a comic book of that they've starred in the comic book. Nobody who anyone is clamoring to see a TV show of. Nobody finished WandaVision and went, man, that show was pretty cool, but you know what I'd like? I want to see a whole show about that Agatha Harkness fella. No. I don't know what they're thinking here. Well, I do know what they're thinking. They're thinking all of these weird diversity things, which is just, ugh, it's just so backwards, man. Like, there's always a way to get more diversity in, whether you're adding in new characters or you're giving a new character who is diverse time to grow and shine in the comic books by getting the right, credible, creative people to create timeless stories for them that can then later be adapted down the line. You know, it's really seemed to me more like they're just trying to get as many issues under their belt of Ironheart or as many issues under their belt of America Chavez or whoever it might be so that they can be like, oh, yeah, people know that character. No, nobody knows that character in any significant way. Nobody knows that character in the way where they see the name and they're like, oh, my God, it's America Chavez. I can't wait to. They're going to do it. They're finally going to do it. Oh, it's been years. I've been waiting to see this storyline and now they're going to do it. No one is doing that. My goodness, will you look at the time? Whew, this was supposed to be a short episode. All right, well, I guess this brings us to the end of another stunning episode. Stunning and brave episode of the Coolest Geek Alive Saturday Specials. You can follow me on Twitter at CoolestGeekJBS. You can email me at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com if you want to. And we've got the last 7 days of King of Kings number one fundraising on Kickstarter right now. There's a special cover done by my buddy Dizzy Arnold that's awesome. If you apply for the campaign and pledge in the next 24 hours, you can be eligible to get that exclusive cover. It's just to the people who have already backed the campaign or who back it in the next 24 hours. So if you happen to be listening to this, go quick, do it, and join me next time on a fabulous episode of The Coolest Geek Alive! You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Talking some shit. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Living the shit. My voice is gonna be fucking awesome. Food in our mouth. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Get in the mouth. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Tell all your friends. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Call right or text. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Raising the bar. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Straight to the stars. It's gonna be fucking awesome. It's starting. Fucking awesome. Fucking awesome. It's gonna be fucking awesome. Just wait. You'll see. You'll all see.